So do you feel a little strange not being part of the fray? Not that you're ever going to be not part of the fray, but right now, just not running, is it a relief? Or is it, how is it just observing it?
Well, it is. It's an interesting thing. I voted in the primary for Joe Kennedy, running for the job that I am vacating. And it was the first time in 40 years I went to the polls and didn't vote for myself. I was a faithful supporter every time I ran. And frankly, didn't feel all that different. I've been very busy with the campaign, but I am just all the more convinced that this was the right time. It's, you know, interesting. I had originally planned to run one more term until the legislative redistricting so changed my district that I thought it would be unfair of me to go to hundreds of thousands of new people and ask them to give me just one more term. I don't think you can do the job adequately for those people in just one term in terms of their issues. But I'm very much happy with the decision. I'm campaigning for other people, for Joe Kennedy, Elizabeth Warren, the president, some of my congressional colleagues, and I'm really looking forward to writing a book. I've done a book proposal and submitted it to my agent, and he was favorably impressed, and I'm really getting ready to move on to the next phase.
So, Congressman, your name came up last week after all the negative publicity that Barack Obama's performance got. They said you should have been the one doing the practice debate with the president, not John Kerry.
Well, in the first place, I think that's unfair to John, and the president himself said that. But people have off days. I've had off days. We've all had. I think people are making too much. But, yeah, it was not a good day for the president. He didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't the kind of mistake that some people have made in debates, like, you know, Rick Perry not being able to count to three, or other people. But, no, I the president himself said John did a perfectly good job. But you get out there and you can misjudge the atmosphere. I think we're all making much too much of it. I don't think one debate has a great deal to do with people's capacity to govern. And most importantly, and I got to say, I am surprised that there are still people who are undecided who can shift. The differences in their public policies between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney are enormous. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how you could be a thoughtful student of public policy and have a coherent set of views. What should we do about abortion? What should we do about taxation? What should we do about climate change, etc.? And say, but I can't decide between these two.
We were just having that conversation with Shannon O'Brien and Charlie Baker, and this whole idea that a debate could persuade you one way or another when it should be policy and ideology that persuade you. But we were saying that, you know, we've become this kind of game show nation with American Idol and all these Survivor shows, and, you know, whoever outperforms the other guy wins.
Well,
and we've, you know.
That's true, although I wouldn't, you know, it's not that new. I mean, the Kennedy-Nixon debates were there. The other thing is, in fairness to the voters, and sometimes, you know, I think too often when we analyze, the voters get off the hook. I mean, people stop me and said, oh, I'm very unhappy with the members of Congress. I said, well, I'm happy with my member of Congress. I voted for me. I don't know who you voted for, but I can't control who you sent there. But, you know, Tip O'Neill used to make the point there was nobody in the House of Representatives who wasn't there because more voters put him or her there than anybody else. But in fairness to the voters, well over 90% of the people, or close to 90% at worst, have made up their minds and based on their policy views. And there were some people in the middle. Now, we make a big deal about the independent. And, yeah, it's good for people not to be tied down to party. But sometimes I think some of these people are independent from any coherent views. I read, frankly, the analyses of some of the focus groups that happened very late. And there are two things that trouble me. One of the things they don't know, but even more, when you listen to some of these focus group analysis, it's the things that people know that aren't true.
Exactly. Well, it's also a matter of being convincing. We were just talking about that, too, though, how you can say things, and it's a matter of being convincing one way or another, whether it's true or not. And I'm
saying,
even these fact-checking organizations don't know.
Sonny Bono and I, when he was in Congress for a few years, ran a couple committees together, and we enjoyed each other's company. You know, we had some differences, obviously, in views, and we talked about the extent to which there was similarity in the two professions. You know, obviously, you're dealing with substance in the political world, but part of it is trying to sell it, trying to get it across. And Sonny and I would talk about the approaches that you would be taking and how sort of gauging an audience and trying to figure out, okay, where is that audience's mind and how do you approach it? Obviously, in politics, it's dishonorable to alter the substance of what you say to appeal to the audience, and I've never done that. But it is certainly appropriate to try to take into account, well, how do you propose this? How do you what's the best way to take what you think is valid and true and present it?
Talking to Congressman Barney Frank on a couple of local ballot questions, I'm going to presume to know where you stand on medicinal use of marijuana, since you've been outspoken about that for years. In fact, even thinking it might be readily legal, period.
Absolutely. But let me say, I have two proposals. I think we have a problem now where we're in this vicious cycle where people get unhappy with government, so they don't want government to have the resources to do what it should be doing, performing important services. And then because they are unhappy, there are even fewer resources. So there are two major areas where I want to make substantial reductions in government spending. One, in the military. I want to tell the rest of the world that America cannot solve every problem for everybody all the time, particularly in Western Europe, and we can save there. At the state level, I think it's time to stop locking up people who smoke marijuana, who abuse other drugs. And if you were not prosecuting people, you know, prison is enormously expensive. If you look at the increased expenditures at the state level, and people have said to me, well, how come it costs more to send someone to Walpole than to send them to Harvard? And the answer is people don't try to escape from Harvard, so it's a little cheaper to keep them there. But yeah, I am in favor of legalizing marijuana, certainly for medical cases, and I know people who have found it helpful when they were suffering from cancer and other issues, but I do not see any reason, I cannot see any rationale to saying, okay, it's all right, it's legal to smoke, it's legal to drink, but it's not legal to ingest marijuana. That makes zero sense.
I was going to segue into the question two, issue two, because I know you endorsed that this morning, and that is being shorthanded as the right to die. But
and I agree with that. And first of all, let me say this. If I were in that situation, I fiercely resent anybody who would tell me what to do. Now, part of it's religious. There are people who say, well, you know what? God gave you your life. Well, if God gave me the life, then God also gave me this terrible illness, this terrible pain, this inability to function. And I want to be able to decide this. And by the way, I think the American people are there. You'll remember, Emily, the Terry Schiavo case.
Yeah.
And when the Congress intervened to tell Terry Schiavo's husband that he could not comply with what he believed to be, and I think showed were her wishes, to stop feeding her so she could die, having had no brain function, et cetera, people thought, oh, that won't be popular. So the Congress intervened, and George Bush, in his pajamas, signed a bill as an emergency to keep it going. The American people on the whole were outraged.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think this is the most personal decision. And to think that the government, and I'm so shocked that conservatives who say, oh, let's keep government out of our lives, let's not have the nanny state. What could be more intrusive than to tell you at these stages when you're in terrible pain or when you're insensitive and insensible and have told people what you want, for the politicians to step in and overrule your own decision?
Do we really need a law, though? I mean, this is taking place in hospitals and in family, you know,
yes,
conversations because, all over the country right now.
It's illegal, happening. And that's not a good thing. It is never a good thing to say, okay, here's the law, but let's ignore it. First of all, you put law enforcement people in a bad situation. You put the medical profession in a bad situation. I don't think it. People said that to me about marijuana. Well, it's not enforced that much, although there it is enforced on a racially and age discriminatory basis. But I don't think it's a good idea to have a practice and wink at it.
All right. Congressman Barney Frank, thanks so much for checking in with us, and look forward to talking to you after the election as well.
Thank you.
All right, I have been speaking with Congressman Barney Frank. At the end of this year, he's stepping down from his seat in Congress, where he served since 1981. I'm Emily Rooney, and this is Boston Public Radio.